Betwixt the Veil, Episode 3, Part 1. Sunday arrived. Things were mostly set in place and laid out to the best of their ability with the time they had. Gemma sat at the decadent Beaufort Bar at the Savoy Hotel. She was wearing a fine turquoise Cheongsam dress, jade rose earrings, turquoise flats, small jade-colored purse, and a delicate jade rose hung from a simple silver chain that twinkled with the reverence of her emerald eyes. This outfit was chosen not only for its stunning effect, but most importantly, it was chosen for freedom of movement, just in case a girl had to kick some ass. Her hair in perfect ringlets flowed past her shoulders, accentuating her firm, full frame. Her confidence was clear but inviting. Her eyes twinkled with an intelligence that was not overbearing. Her poise was graceful but not pompous or assuming. Someone that clearly belonged yet hinted of wealth, playing the role of a high-priced lady of the night to a T. She elegantly sat stirring her gin and tonic with an easy smile. The bar was rather empty, but things were beginning to pick up for the dinner rush. Her gentleman caller had not yet arrived, but Gemma felt a bit uneasy despite her calm appearance. She was still stunned from what had transpired during the previous night's meeting with Reggie. After they sped away into the shadows, they found themselves quickly emerging into the light of the underground, and as they headed home, luck was with them, and they made it back without being waylaid or detained. The lights of a dozen emergency response units strobed across the dark buildings lining the streets, headed toward the scene of the incident to investigate what had caused the minor blackout. It's not often that a small electromagnetic pulse goes off in the middle of London. The sisters returned home to find the incident being broadcast on the telly. Fortunately, there was no footage of the incident and all of the security cameras were destroyed by the pulse. There was no mention of any unconscious or injured people on the scene, just clips of the area in which the sisters had fought and clear evidence of the shockwave created by Gemma's newfound ability. Gemma still didn't understand how she had done what she had done. It was like sensing the edge of time and slipping through the veil, almost as if part of her mind was kept in the present as her ethereal self was projected forward in time and her body trailed behind, almost as if she existed in two places at once and was connected to her physical self and spirit self by a shining silver thread pulling her through the vastness of space. Her mind had filled with the imperative need to save her sister and released a hidden power locked within herself, a power that she had never perceived before. Gemma could still sense it, but gently, like a whisper in her ear, like a faded memory that hinted of a lost understanding of the infinite. As her thoughts returned to that moment, ripples of energy spiked through her body, causing her skin to tighten and her hair to rise. For a brief moment, she could feel the intensity of her power fluctuating beneath her skin. Gemma reached out, and as she felt the power begin to radiate from her fingertips, the lights began to flicker. Most patrons didn't notice, but it was enough to catch it if you were paying attention. In the moment, she allowed her presence to resume, but thought she may be able to access the void if she reached out long enough. She gently shook her head and refocused. This was not the time to be playing with unknown abilities. Gemma and Tara had discussed what had happened in great detail and decided that they knew far too little about this new ability, and the possibilities of complicating the job was too high. The plan was tricky, but they had hashed out several contingencies, depending on where the device was located. A few days prior, a courier had delivered a package from Reggie, a computer for the upload, and a replica of the lead-lined case and thumb drive in case Mr. Jennings became suspicious and checked his pocket while Gemma made her excuse and took it to her sister in the Buford bar. Gemma set her jaw, determined to keep her wits about her as others were relying on her to execute her part of the plan and avoid drawing any unwanted attention. Well, at least no more than she was already with her stunning appearance, for many men and more than a few women's eyes had glanced her way. She was uncomfortable receiving that much attention, as she generally stayed hidden within the shadows. Even so, she couldn't help feeling a little thrilled and exhilarated by the attention she was receiving. The admiration of so many was an intoxicating sensation. Feeling the intensity of those gazes, Gemma shifted awkwardly in her stool, but recovered her composure just as their mark entered through the doors of the Buford corridor. It was as if his presence caused a ripple in the energies of those observing his entrance, as if he were the wind itself pulling them within his tempest of presence. As Gemma's true sight had shown her, his visage commanded attention, and he had done just that to the entire room. It was as if the universe stood still to acknowledge the presence of a titan. Then, like a shift of the tide, all motion and conversation resumed. Gemma couldn't help the way that her eyes lingered over his chiseled features and elegant attire. He wore a bespoke three-piece suit of black wool with fine leather shoes, a pinstripe tie, black hair, and deep brown eyes that felt as though they were calculating and cataloging everything within his purview. When his gaze came to rest upon Gemma, his eyes sharpened like a bird of prey, and a sharp, severe smile slid across his face. In that moment, she felt like an insignificant creature pinned by the deadly gaze of a hawk. Jennings strode straight towards her without hesitation, stopping within arm reach, and said,
"Gemma Jade, I presume?"
Gemma extended her hand and said,
"I am at that, and it's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Jennings."
He took her hand, gently kissed it, and said,
"The pleasure is mine, and might I say that your beauty is more captivating than I had imagined. And please, there's no need for formality. You may call me Keith."
He smiled, his brilliant white teeth gleaming in the ambient light. Gemma smiled in return, feeling oddly giddy from his charm, yet her instincts kicked in, and she motioned for him to take a seat next to her at the bar. Gemma was shocked at the mild enamorment she felt within his presence. It's not like she thought he was attractive, yet it was as if he was an immense planet and she was a moon held within his gravitational pull. He slid smoothly into the stool next to her and motioned to the bartender with a slight tip of his chin. The bartender immediately came at his beckon, as if awaiting his command, and eagerly said,
"Can I help you, sir?"
"I have a reservation for two under Jennings, and I will take what the lady is having while we wait."
The bartender nodded his head, prepared the drink, set it in front of Mr. Jennings, and scurried off to inform the host of the reservation. Gemma and Gentleman Jennings chatted cordially and exchanged pleasantries until the host arrived. He was a squat man in his late 50s, with rounded facial features, large sideburns, and a chin that wobbled as he walked. In short, he was the perfect depiction of an aristocratic manservant or butler. He said in a stuffy, posh accent,
"Mr. Jennings, Miss Jade, would you please follow me?"
As they walked from the dark, almost cavernous, black and gold decor of the Buford Bar into the Thames Dining Hall, Gemma couldn't help but be overwhelmed by the opulence of the place. She had been in many elegant places in her numerous dealings, but this place was lavish in a way that dwarfed her previous experiences by leaps and bounds. Under the arched ceiling of the glass-domed atrium in the center of the room, a delicately latticed gazebo engulfed a grand piano. A neatly fitted pianist was playing some soft classical arrangements, like a caged bird playing sweet melodies to its masters. From the ornate high-backed chairs of beige and gold filigree, fine worked wooden tables with elaborate scrollwork on the borders, to the grand alabaster pillars trimmed with gold that stood around the center of the pianist's birdcage. The walls were hung with fine gold-framed paintings at regular intervals along the walls, depicting personages of a more elegant time. As they approached their table, the many guests already dining turned their heads like puppets, attempting to catch a glimpse of Gemma and Gentleman Jennings as they passed. As if they were a stone being dropped into a pond, their heads turned like undulating ripples. The host pulled out Gemma's chair, motioned her to sit, and then did the same for Mr. Jennings. As the two settled into their seats, the host placed two menus in front of each of them respectively and asked,
"Would you two like anything further to drink while you wait? Perhaps some wine or..."
He was quickly cut off with a curt wave of the hand as Mr. Jennings said,
"The lady and I will take the 45-year-old Midleton very rare Irish whiskey from my private stock."
The host bobbed his head and in a soft voice said,
"But of course, Mr. Jennings, and your waiter will be with you promptly."
With that, he scurried off like a waddling duck through the maze of guests to fulfill Mr. Jennings' request. Gemma smiled at Keith and said,
"How did you know that whiskey is my drink of choice?"
He returned her smile and said,
"Let's just say it was a hunch. I was certain you were not much of a wine connoisseur, and your Dublin accent made it a safe bet that you would enjoy a fine whiskey."
Gemma just smiled up at him, thinking that there was more to it than that, but was pleased to not have to endure some so-called refined wine and pretend to enjoy it. To Gemma, most wines just tasted like rotten grape juice, and nothing could beat a 45-year-old Irish single malt Midleton very rare whiskey. Not that she had had the opportunity to taste one yet, seeing as the bottles ran about $40,000 each. Keith sat upright in his chair, observing her with one of his calculating looks, as if trying to read the thoughts that were running through Gemma's mind. There was something rather unsettling yet alluring about that gaze, making Gemma blush and shift in her seat. Gemma shook herself mentally as if shaking off a fog that was quickly wrapping her mind in a haze. Gemma quickly regained her composure and asked,
"So I take it you spend a lot of time at the Savoy? I'm sure there are not many that have a private stock here."
"Indeed," Jennings replied. "When I am in London, this is my preferred place of residence. To be honest, I feel like the Savoy has become my home away from home."
"So where is your actual home?"
Gemma asked with an inquisitive smile. For a moment, there was a shadow that seemed to pass like a storm cloud over his face, as if struck with a painful memory. It was gone in an instant, replaced with his cordial smile, and he said,
"My family home resides in the moors of Devon, but I have not been back there for many, many years."
Gemma noticed that faraway look again, but it was just a glimmer this time.
"I am mostly traveling between here and the Americas for business. The Savoy and similar places throughout the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and South America are what I call home these days."
Gemma feigned an innocent ignorance and said,
"That must be exciting, moving from place to place, meeting new people and being in many different countries all the time. What brings you to London on this trip?"
As he went to speak, his right hand unconsciously slid into his inner jacket pocket and then quickly shot back out as he seemed to remember himself and said,
"I am here to meet with an old friend to discuss some business. Nothing exciting or interesting, I assure you."
As he said this, his expression became suddenly suspicious, and he shot Gemma a piercing look. She felt the weight of it, almost like a physical blow. Gemma felt as though her mind was under siege and mentally reeled from the intensity. This startled her in more ways than one, as she was unaware that Jennings had any magical abilities, and she knew for certain that he was attempting to see her thoughts. Secondly, the situation had just become increasingly more dangerous. Gemma forced the panic down and focused. Ordinarily, Gemma would have no problem repelling any mental attack, but if she were to do so, he would become aware that she was gifted. Instead, she quickly adjusted and amended the thoughts he would perceive. These would portray none of her true intentions or real identity. Instead, she would show him images and thoughts that fit his expectations of the Gemma Jade he thought her to be. This all passed within a blink of an eye, and within moments, Mr. Jennings visibly relaxed. The transition of this interaction went by so smoothly that it had seemed to Mr. Jennings as if nothing untoward had transpired, and all was as it seemed. At that moment, Gemma was thankful for the years of harsh training her father had forced on her in her youth. Even though her father was a ruthless narcissist and unrelenting drill sergeant, many of his teachings of mental fortitude and thought manipulation had served her well many times throughout her adult life. Just then, the waiter arrived with their drinks, placing two fine crystal tumblers of neat whiskey in front of each of them. The waiter, a taller man in his mid-40s, was dressed in black slacks, vest, and bow tie with a white button-up shirt, stood back and said in a smoky voice,
"Are you ready to order, or would you like to have some more time?"
Mr. Jennings waved his hand and without even looking at the menu said,
"The lady will have the lamb cutlets and salad, and I will have the ribeye, rare, with the roasted vegetables."
Gentleman Jennings handed both the menus back to the waiter, who took them, bobbed his head, and without another word, he departed to inform the chef. Gemma was again mildly taken aback by how assertive and certain Keith was, and unsettled that he again had known exactly what she would have ordered. She did not reveal any of these disquieting feelings, but instead picked up her glass, prompting Keith to do the same. They held their glasses up in a toast, and Gemma said,
"What shall we toast to?"
Jennings tilted his head slightly, as if inspecting her with a sly smile, and said,
"Let us toast to an evening of enchanting mystery, pleasant company, and enlightening conversation."
With that, they clinked their glasses together and sipped their drinks. The whiskey had an intense taste, rich with peppery spices, quickly softening to enjoyable hints of licorice and honey. The spices then returning to the front of her mouth and slowly fading. Gemma was very impressed with the fine whiskey and could feel the warmth of the drink spreading through her body like a small fire, soothing her frayed nerves. The meal proceeded without any further terse moments, and Mr. Jennings continued to be the perfect example of a gentleman, but would definitely steer the conversation away from his work or business any time their discourse meandered in that direction. Gemma noticed several times throughout the meal that Keith unconsciously would reach to the upper left lapel and to check to make sure whatever lay within the inner pocket was still secure. Throughout the meal, Jennings requested that the bottle of Midlothian Very Rare be brought out, noticing how thoroughly Gemma was enjoying the beverage. Gemma was careful to only sip at the drink, but by the end of the meal, both had consumed three glasses of the fine liquor and were chatting rather comfortably. Keith had some very interesting insights on British history, including some facts about the London's Savoy that surprised Gemma. The hotel stood on the foundation of the Savoy Palace, which in 1864 had burned in its entirety, with the exception of the chapel. The property sat empty until the impresario Richard d'Oyly Cartier bought it in 1880. He proceeded to build the Savoy Theater specifically to produce the Gilbert and Sullivan operas. Much of this information was common knowledge, but the bit Gemma found most intriguing was when he spoke of the renovations that took place starting in 2007. He spoke as if he was involved with the renovations himself, but when he realized where his ramblings had taken him, he quickly redirected the conversation. At one point, Gemma, being curious and realizing that Keith had a vast knowledge of the building, asked about the ghost sightings on the fifth floor and room 502. Mr. Jennings momentarily stiffened, his eyes sharpening with suspicion, but quickly relaxed and waved it off as guests getting too drunk or staff rumors and hearsay. If Gemma had been anyone else, she would have accepted his common narrative, but there was something about his reaction that unsettled her. His initial reaction made her think there was something more to the sightings that he was not willing to say. In the Fae world, many ghost sightings and apparitions are human souls unwilling to move on or unable to, because they are trapped between two worlds to serve as an intermediary for conjurers. Sometimes they were just devious elemental spirits that enjoyed distressing humans. All the same, she let him drive the conversation on, occasionally asking polite questions and laughing at his stiff but aptly delivered jokes. She found it rather easy to let him steer the conversation, and he certainly did not seem to mind talking. It was clear to Gemma that he liked the sound of his own voice, and to be honest, she couldn't help admitting that she did enjoy listening to his dulcet tones. All the same, she couldn't help the nagging feeling that there was something more to the allure of this man. Every time her mind wandered to those thoughts, she was again distracted by his voice. The dinner finally came to its end, a good 3/4 of the fine whiskey consumed, and had put both in a more cordial mood. Gemma was realizing that she had not really made many more gentle inquiries as to his purpose for being here or attempt to whittle out the location of the thumb drive. All the same, she was almost certain that the device in question was located in the left inner pocket of his dinner jacket, where his unconscious reach had indicated it to likely be. As the conversation came to a natural pause, Gemma reached forward and gently grasped Keith's hand, and with a suggestive tone and a twinkle in her eyes said, "This conversation has been engrossing, but you'll have to excuse me. I need to go to the ladies' room to freshen up." As if this was a clear cue, the dinner had come to a conclusion, indicating the next phase of their assumed date. Gemma was shocked, for she had not been able to get a true sight reading from him. Gentleman Jennings smoothly stood and walked around the table while Gemma deftly slid the replica case from her purse into the palm of her hand. Jennings pulled out her chair. Gemma stood and in one smooth motion turned towards Keith, pressing her voluptuous body against the right side of his angular frame, kissing his cheek and whispering, "Leave a key with the host and I will be up promptly." As she did so, she simultaneously slid her hand across his chest as if in a caress and straight into his left pocket. Gemma skillfully exchanged the dummy case in her hand with the object in his pocket. In one fluid motion, she removed her hand, palming the device as she stepped back, smiling into his stunned face. The interaction was over in seconds, and the lift couldn't have been performed more skillfully. To be honest, in that moment, she could have likely fumbled the exchange, stepped on his foot, spilled a drink on him, and he still wouldn't have noticed the interchange, because he was so intoxicated by her overwhelming presence. While he was so clearly addled, she turned around and deftly snatched up his empty glass and strode towards the women's lavatory without a glance back. As she made it into the main hallway, she quickly glanced about her to make sure there was no one watching, and with a moment of concentration, she activated her shadow cloak to deter any unwanted eyes from observing her next move. Gemma bypassed the toilets and looped all the way back around to the Beaufort Bar. There, Tara sat on one of the fine, lacquered wood tables by the bar, wearing a blue pantsuit and glasses, acting as if engrossed by what she was viewing on her laptop. Gemma skillfully wove her way towards Tara as if heading to the bar. As she approached, a man heading in the opposite direction stumbled into her path. She thought it a very convenient opportunity to gracefully change course, smoothly placing Jennings' crystal tumbler on Tara's table and sliding the palmed thumb drive under her napkin. The man, not even noticing that he had almost collided with her, continued on his way. Gemma cursed, realizing she had forgotten her shadow cloak was still activated, and released it. She proceeded to the bar where she casually sat at one of the stools. In instances where Gemma was in full light and view of most people, her shadow cloak worked by preventing their eyes from focusing on her. If they were to gaze in her direction, their eyes would slide right off her. The man who she had narrowly avoided probably didn't even know he had almost walked into her. She had to be more careful about that in the future, because appearing suddenly like that in front of a room full of people would be one surefire way of attracting a lot of unwanted attention. As Gemma sat at the bar, casually waiting for Tara to swipe the fingerprints off the tumbler, unlock the case, and transfer the information to the computer, she made a show of impatiently waiting for the host to arrive with Mr. Jennings' key and room number. To help perpetuate this guise, she turned to the bartender and ordered their finest bottle of champagne. As the barman disappeared into the back room behind the bar, the host from earlier arrived. He strode forward with a key card in hand and said,
"Miss Jade, Mr. Jennings will receive you in the royal suite when you are ready. He has ordered a bottle of 1961 Moet and Chandon Dom Perignon. I will inform the bartender to retrieve it from Mr. Jennings' private stock."
With that, he bobbed his head and flitted behind the bar where the barman had just disappeared to. Gemma felt rather satisfied at how things were coming along. Everything was going according to one variation of their plans, and Mr. Jennings had not suspected a thing. Gemma scanned the room, searching for anyone overtly paying her or Tara any attention. It seemed that most were either involved in their own conversations and enjoying their drinks or minding their own business. Just as Gemma was starting to get antsy, Tara gave her the simple signal, one that anyone watching wouldn't have been any the wiser of. Tara simply uncrossed her legs and tapped her ear while peering into the computer screen as if contemplating what was displayed there. Gemma sighed inwardly because just then the bartender returned but was empty-handed. The man walked up to her and said,
"Sorry for the delay, madam, but I was retrieving your bottle when I was approached by the host, who informed me that you were to be joining Mr. Jennings in the royal suite. The requested bottle has been sent up to his room, so feel free to join him whenever you're ready."
With nothing further holding her at the bar, she grabbed her purse and swung it over her left shoulder, wrapping her shadow cloak around her once more as she strode off towards the lift and her sister's table. Just as planned, she made a point of passing as close as possible to Tara, who expertly slipped the thumb drive case into her bag. Just as she pulled away from Tara's table, a jolt of energy shot through Gemma, causing her to stumble as the air around her seemed to ripple. She quickly regained her composure and strode forward. Momentarily disquieted, she glanced back to see what had caused the anomaly, but found only her sister staring forward into the screen, typing away on her keyboard, and the man a few tables away intently engrossed in his novel. Nothing seemed out of place, but she had imagined neither the feeling nor what she had seen. She checked her shadow cloak, and it was seemingly still in place. So she continued down the hall, into the lift, and headed to the fifth floor.